Could you state your name and service?
Yes, Robert Mordecai, and U.S. Navy during Korea 53 to 56. You want my rank? I ended up as a Lieutenant JG. Got my commission from OCS Newport, Rhode Island in July of 53.
Okay.
And then went to the Gilmore, Howard W. Gilmore submarine tender in Key West, Florida.
Okay.
And was there in communications until 55. Navy sent out requests for junior officers for the training centers.
Okay.
So I was transferred from Bainbridge, from Key West to Bainbridge, Maryland, and was a battalion commander. That is, the setup was that the recruits were in barracks 85 per floor.
Okay.
And two floors made up then one battalion for recruit training purposes. So that's what I was in charge of. Then, the last 2 months I was there, the assistant regimental commander got transferred. So they moved me over to that billet, and there I was in charge of 2,500 recruits.
Okay.
At the age of 25.
Wow. Well, let's...
That's it.
Let's kind of back up to the very beginning.
All right.
And could you tell me, Bob, where were you born?
Boston, Massachusetts.
And what did your parents do?
Okay. My dad was a life insurance agent for the Northwestern Mutual, and my mother was a housewife.
And where did you go to school?
Okay, I went to the John Ward School in Newton, Massachusetts, a great school. I found out 3 years ago that when I was in the first grade, the young man you may have heard of was in the sixth grade. His name was Jack Lemmon.
Oh.
I didn't know that at the time.
Interesting.
But who would know, you know.
Sure. So after...
That's it. Then I went I went to junior high. The name escapes me. And then went to Newton High School. And my last year at Newton High, I did at Tabor Academy in Marion, Massachusetts. Graduated from there.
And what did you do after high school?
Then went to college at College Ripon, Wisconsin, 47 to 51.
What brought you from Massachusetts to Wisconsin for college?
Oh, very interesting. Okay. I'm a senior in high school, and I had not a clue as to where to apply for college. It was right after the war. Veterans are coming back. My dad had a client at Massachusetts Institute of Technology, MIT. His name was Carl Compton. He was the president of the college, of the university. Very famous man. And so my dad made an appointment for me to see him, because if anybody would know where to go, Dr. Compton would know. And I got the usual thing from my dad, make sure you know, watch what you're saying, brush your teeth, make sure your tie's on straight, don't smoke, whatever, I don't know. So I am really nervous. So I showed up at MIT, third floor of the building, if you've ever seen a picture of it, is all executive offices. And at the very end of the building is where the president's office is. The secretary out there introduced me to his secretary. And then I was escorted into Dr. Compton's office. I didn't know what to expect. I walk in. Here's a guy with his sleeves rolled up, tie down to here, cigar in his mouth. And his first thing was, "You must be Bob. How the hell are you?" And I thought, oh, my goodness. He said, "What?" So he sat down. He says, "You want a cigar?" And I said, "No, thanks." He said, what can I do for you today? So I told him. And he said, easy. He says, don't come to a place like this. This is a factory. You get your college degree. Go to a liberal arts college and get an education. Grow up a little bit, get a little maturity. And then when you've done all that, that's the time. And he gave me a list of 5 or 6 schools, one of which was Ripon. They had I found out after it was a working agreement. So when we were going out, we were going to Milwaukee anyway for something else. We stopped in, interview was accepted. That's that story.
Wow.
That's how I got there.
So you graduated then from Ripon?
Ripon.
And what was your college degree?
I got a Bachelor of Arts degree in chemistry. Never used it.
And what happened after college?
I tried graduate school for a couple of years without any success at all. Mm-hmm. First, as a medical student at Boston University. You may have heard of a man by the name of Isaac Asimov, the science fiction writer.
Mm-hmm.
Got to know him pretty well. Crazy man. That's a whole story in itself. And then I went to University of Pennsylvania Graduate School, Business Administration.
Mm-hmm.
That lasted the first semester. I flunked out. I couldn't do it.
Really?
So now I either drafted, or what do I do? Well, say, I'm in the Navy.
So you chose the Navy.
Is that or being a foot soldier, I didn't want to
mm-hmm.
do that.
And what intrigued you about enlisting in the Navy?
Oh, well, the choice was so much better, you
mm-hmm.
know. And oceans are always fascinating. I love being out there.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, you go out in the middle of the ocean, 600 miles from nowhere. You can't stay awake. I mean, the motion is,
wow.
Oh, it's wonderful.
Huh. So where did you go to training? Where
training
was boot camp?
Training was at Newport, Rhode Island. A couple of guys that I had met in Boston, Newton, three of us drove down there,
mm-hmm.
and we showed up where you're supposed to, and then the captain, Navy captain, came out. Big hall, it was about 600-700 of us there, and it's all very relaxed, and welcome aboard, and da-da-da, and then when we're done, step outside, and we'll get you sworn in and go from there, okay? Which we did, and as they say, then it really hit the fan. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
And so we were assigned to barracks. And for 4 months, we lived a very rigid schedule. You can see this on YouTube. What they're doing now is no way near what little we did.
Mm-hmm.
I could never go through it. Mm-hmm. Today's schedule. Couldn't be done.
Why do you say that?
Well, the schedule today is divided up into 4 segments of 4 weeks each.
Mm-hmm.
First 4 weeks is nothing but physical training.
Mm-hmm.
Second 4 weeks is Navy, whatever, subjects and so on. Third 4 weeks is officer training. Mm-hmm. The last 4 weeks is putting your officer training to use by putting you in charge of the new ones coming in the first
mm-hmm.
4 weeks.
Oh.
And that cycle continues to repeat itself.
Okay.
There are two men to a room, and the rooms are much better than what we had.
Mm-hmm. Now, how many men are in a barrack?
Well, the Navy recruits, we had 85 to a floor.
Okay.
And so instead of calling it a floor, they called it a deck.
Sure.
But 85.
85.
On each floor. And that's 170, and there were 5 buildings like that.
Mm-hmm.
So.
And how many weeks of training did you have?
I had 16 weeks.
16 weeks.
Yes.
And what was that like?
Looking back, pretty easy, relatively speaking. You start mm-hmm. out. The first thing that you do is you have to take the swimming test, which consists of getting up on a 10-meter board, that's 40 feet off the water. Mm-hmm. And I'm nervous just being at this height. Forget mm-hmm. about, you know, jumping into a pool.
Were you a swimmer?
No.
Okay.
No, no. If you can't swim, you can't get in the Navy. I mean, that's it.
Okay.
If you can't swim or be trained, you can't go. They'll okay. give you a general discharge. So you you take off your boots, tie the laces together, put it around your neck, step off, swim 50 feet, whatever it is, down one end, turn around, swim back. That's your test. If you can't do it, then they put you in a special class. If you can't do that, you're out.
So what was that like for you, being a non-swimmer?
No, I was a swimmer.
Oh, you were a swimmer.
Oh, yeah, I
okay.
swim. That's
okay.
my problem.
Okay.
And then after that, changed clothes, and then we went and got our tests, our shots. We got two in each arm. The way they did it, the syringe held enough for who knows how many people. Just kept changing needles.
Oh.
So they give you a syringe that's about a foot long, and I don't know, looks wow. enough for a horse.
Wow.
And then now you start. That's the way it is.
Any buddy stories stand out during those 16 weeks of training?
Oh, no, it's too hard to. One of the things that you're assigned to, there's four of us to a barrack, a room.
Mm-hmm.
There's barely enough room to turn around in the room.
And there's four of you in there.
Four, you had double-deck bunks, you know, mm-hmm. two and two. And each week, one of us is assigned to be the guy that makes sure that place is neat.
Mm-hmm.
My turn. They posted my deal for that week. I had 5 points off for unseen dirt. True story. And when I got commissioned, I mentioned that to Chief. He kind of laughed.
Yeah. Uh-huh. Great. Yeah. After your 16 weeks in Rhode Island,
yes.
then where did you go?
Then I was sent to Key West. Signed to the Howard W. Gilmore submarine tender. They no longer exist because of the atomic fleet. And that's in the communications division.
Mm-hmm.
And my first job is I had to learn how to type. I never learned how to type. So I spent 6 hours a day for 2 months learning how to type.
Wow.
That's what I did.
And that was on the ship?
On the ship,
how
yes.
big a ship? How many?
It's only a thing there, but it's about 600 feet long.
Okay.
And maybe 60 feet wide or something. It holds, wartime it'll hold about 800-900 people.
Okay. 900 people max.
No, when I was on, it was about 600.
Mm-hmm. What was life like on that ship?
We tied up at Key West.
Mm-hmm.
About once a month, maybe every month and a half, we'd go out for someplace.
Mm-hmm.
Nothing major,
sure.
you know.
How long were you there, down in docked out in Key West?
Key West to, I think the fall of 55, I think that's when I got transferred to Bainbridge.
And where is Bainbridge?
Maryland. Yes, the Navy had, and I think still has, three training centers. Bainbridge, Maryland, Chicago, goodness. San Diego is the other one, and the Great Lakes is the one near Chicago.
Okay.
So those three.
How long were you down in Bainbridge?
I went from, until I got separated from service, from roughly October of 55 to May of 56. Then under my contract, I was required to stay in the active reserves for 5 years.
Okay.
That lasted a year, and then I was given the option of signing out of that if I wanted to or stay. So I signed out.
Okay. How long down in Bainbridge?
How long?
Yeah.
Well, from whatever that was, October of 55 to June or May of the 56.
Did you have any orders overseas?
No.
Were you happy about that, no doubt?
Perfect. I didn't want to get into a war zone.
Could live with that, yeah.
I can manage without that.
Yeah.
Yep.
After Bainbridge, where did life take you?
then went back to Boston, and we're in the life insurance business. My dad was an agent at that time for the Northwestern, so that's what kind of work I did. And I wasn't getting anywhere particularly. My brother had gone to Denver after he got out of the service. He was in the Army. So I thought, well, what the heck, you know, single, why not? So I hopped in the car and drove out to Denver. That's where I started work.
Did you eventually marry or have children?
Oh, yeah. Got married out there. Should I tell you how I met my wife? Is that worthwhile?
If you want to share that, that would be
great. Oh, okay. My brother was kind of a wild man. Anyway, two of his clients happened to be MDs. They do, you know, life insurance exams. And the excuse was that he needed to bring some papers over there. I found out afterwards what he was doing was to introduce me to gal I later married. But anyway, so we get over there that morning, late that morning, and then at that time, x-ray technicians, it was all like, it was not the computer stuff we have now. It's all done like photographs. So she showed up, I showed up, and she wasn't particularly thrilled at the fact that I saw her with this sloppy lab coat and on and on and on. But in spite of that, I stuck my neck out and said, the only way I can apologize, maybe go out for a cup of coffee tomorrow or something. So that was okay. That's when it started. So we went out that on a Wednesday, went out on a Friday, went out Saturday. She came home Saturday. I found this out a year and a half later. She got home Saturday night and told her folks she met the man she was going to marry. I didn't know that, you know. So that lasted almost 52 years.
That's wonderful. Yeah. Good for you. Do you keep in contact with any of the people you served with in the military?
No. I have no idea where they would be.
Really? No, did you go to any reunions?
No. Nope, I was done. Remember, I got out, I was 25. The commanding officer, Captain Nichols, was in his early 40s. Commander Hankson, who was executive officer, was in his late 30s. These are all people off the submarine fleet, World War II. So, you know, they would not be alive, I mean, at this point. And I still remember our chaplain was George Felder, good Lutheran man. Anyway, that's another story.
Any stories you'd like to share with us?
Yes, this, which brings me to the kind of, to me, was interesting. We had, on the intercom system, would give an evening prayer, 10 o'clock every night, tied up or at sea. Anyway, I heard this, you know, I thought it was all a bunch of hooey anyway. I thought religion was a, you know, big waste of time. Anyway, that's the way it felt. We went up to Newfoundland. The ship went up to Newfoundland in the summer of 54, I believe. Anyway, it was Hurricane Carol we hit on the way back. It cleaned off everything we had on the decks of that ship and damn near sunk us. I mean, this was a severe. I had to deliver a message to the captain in the pilot house, and as I opened the door to come into the pilot house, I looked down and I couldn't see the bottom of that wave. And we were hit with this stuff for 4 hours. We finally came out of it. And I remember that night I began to rethink my priorities, I'll tell you. I think that it was a wake-up call. I wasn't so, you know. That was my baptism.
Really?
Oh, yes. Absolutely.
So that totally changed you, that experience?
Absolutely.
That hurricane?
Yep, it was God grabbing me, saying, you know, listen, you jerk. It's true. I'm in charge of your life. And that's the way it is.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, yes, sir.
Good for you.
Yep.
You survived that. That.
Oh, yes. Oh, gee.
Any other stories stand out to you?
That was a major, I'm trying to think of, I told you about the ship was on the Gilmore.
Did those 10 o'clock prayers have more meaning after that hurricane?
Oh, absolutely. Oh, I got a story for you that you'll get a kick out. We're tied up. I had the 4 to 8 a.m. watch, which didn't mean much because, I mean, you know, who's going to show up, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Beautiful sunrise, nice early summer day. And I looked down at the where we're stationed, and way down at the end of the dock, I see a man wearing a white suit, white hat, and two civilians, one on each side, walking with him. It was Harry Truman. I knew right away who it was.
Uh-huh.
So I told the bosun's mate, weather decks only. Do not pipe, you know, you'll wake everybody up. Weather decks only. When he gets near our stern, it's denounced as attention to starboard, President of the United States. Which they did. And
hey,
old Harry's waving his hat like this. And when we got even where I was, we saluted him, he saluted back. Harry Truman.
Wow.
Oh, yeah.
That's really a neat moment in history.
Yes, it is. He was an interesting man.
Yeah. Good for you.
I think that was the... I've forgotten. I was going to mention another bit, but in talking about that, I lost it.
Yeah. How did you feel about leaving the military?
Well, I was glad it was over. Mm-hmm. I didn't want to... My cousin stayed. He graduated 4 classes ahead of me,
mm-hmm.
and was also, I know, was also in Key West. Eddie was 4 or 5 months pregnant when he got sent down there. To this day, I've never met Eddie or his son,
mm-hmm.
who would now be 60s, I guess,
mm-hmm.
something like that.
Interesting.
The other story I want to tell you is... history says that John Paul Jones was the youngest commanding officer of a naval vessel.
Mm-hmm.
Not true.
Who was it?
Let me tell you about it. One of the guys in class with me was a little Jewish kid from Brooklyn named Sam Nahum, Nahaum. Sam graduated the same class I did and was assigned to a small patrol craft in Key West. Small had J.G. was a commanding officer, an ensign, and a chief, and about 15 crew members. Sam shows up on a Sunday morning up in the wardroom, scared out of his mind. I mean, he looked like he was about to die. And I said, what's going on? He said, they just took the boss in, appendectomy, emergency appendectomy. I'm the CO of this thing. I don't know what to do. So I said, well, do you get along well with your chief? Oh, yeah. I said, you sit down with that chief, and you be straight with him. Don't, you know, no big shot here. You're the commanding officer now, and it's your responsibility. Just let him know that your ears are open and your mouth is closed. So he did. Sam was 23 years old when he took command, when he took that position, which makes him about a year younger than John Paul Jones.
Wow.
Isn't that so?
Very interesting.
It is.
And very young.
Oh, yeah.
Very
young.
He
was 23 going on 17, you know.
Wow. Interesting. Any other stories that you'd like to share that stand out after all these years?
No, that was the... it's not a and about the about the service as such, but yes, I hadn't been on board more than about 6 weeks, and the Navy sent out a call for junior officers who had not gone to the Navy Justice School in Newport, Rhode Island, to go not to become attorneys, but to be familiar with the Uniform Code of Military Justice, which is the how discipline is handed out, you know, court-martials and all. So I was sent up to Newport. Now, keep in mind, I'm an ensign. That's the same as a second lieutenant.
Mm-hmm.
It's late afternoon, and in walks a Marine captain, Paul Blumenthal. I'll never forget it. And he realizes that he's going to have to room with an ensign. That's, you know, that's putting him down. He had just come back from Korea. He was in the Incheon landing and all that stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Navy graduate, you know, from the academy. And so that's, you know, introductions. And next morning, 5 o'clock, he's got his combat boots on. He says, "Come on, Bob, we're going to go run." I said, "What?" He said, "Come on, Bob, we're going to go run." I said, "No, sir, I'm not going anywhere." "Oh, you know," he said, a few expletives. So he went out for half an hour. He ran around the base. Came back, got cleaned up. And that was my experience with the United States Marine Corps. I have another story. Is there room for one more?
Sure.
Okay. I don't know where they came on board, but we were cruising near Vieques Island, which is near Cuba. Navy for years had used it as a gunnery range.
Mm-hmm.
And our ship had, I don't know why, but we had a 40, 50, 60 Marines on board. They were going to use that as a training exercise to land, you know, in these landing boats. So my boss called me in. I was assigned communications officer to go with him. They give you a helmet with a white stripe down the back, and it's just like a John Wayne movie. You know, you climb down the ladder, and get into boats, get lined up, and, you know. So we hit the beach and do whatever you do, dug yourself in, get ready to fire the ammunition over our heads. And the minute I heard the word fire, I put my binoculars on the top of it, you know. The minute I did that, somebody hit me on the top of my head, my helmet on. I mean, it was a... And the guy yells out, "Get your bleeping head down, sir."
Wow.
It was the gunnery sergeant who was in charge.
Oh, my God.
What you do is, you don't do that. You dig, you crunch up and wait till you hear the explosion.
Yeah.
Count to about 5 and then look, because sand's flying all over the place. Then, you know, that's plenty of time to see where it is.
Wow.
Okay, now we're back on board.
That is scary.
Yep, back on board at the quarter deck. There's a message for me. I've been invited to dinner at the Chief's quarters.
Wow.
Chief's mess, right? Pretty good.
Yeah.
You know, here I am at JG, you know. Big stuff. So I made sure I got everything nice and neat and so on. Who's the first guy I meet when I got there? That Marine sergeant.
Oh, my gosh.
Yep. And he said, "Mr. Mordecai?" I said, "Yes, guy." He says, "We're going to learn you to be a Marine." So always got a kick out of that.
That is a great story.
Isn't it? Yeah.
Wow. And, and you survived that. Wow.
Oh, yeah. No, I still remember I was one of 4 ensigns on board, And for some reason, these other men just could not get along with their chiefs. I mean, it was get along. They had to do what they were told, but mm-hmm. not willingly.
Sure.
And they couldn't understand how, I never had a problem.
Mm-hmm.
And they didn't realize that you can't treat people. The rank has nothing to do with you as a person.
Mm-hmm.
It's just how you get paid and what you do. That's all sure. that is, you know.
Yeah.
None of the personal stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So I always treated Chief Ryder with respect, and he treated me with respect, and we got along just fine.
Mm-hmm.
Never caught on. This one guy was commissioned ROTC out of Princeton. Thought he'd hung the moon, you know.
Yeah.
Bad.
So, Bob, now, what did you say you did after leaving the military?
Okay, then I went into the life insurance business.
Life insurance.
And tried that in Boston for about 6 months because my dad was there. And I wasn't getting anywhere.
Sure. And then you went to Denver.
Yeah, I went to Denver because my brother had gone to Denver and several years before. So I joined up with him and went from there.
And what brought you to Moorhead, Minnesota?
Okay. Now, at 65, I retired in Denver. And it was just, I don't know. My problem was I could keep, there's no limit how long you can stay in the business.
Mm-hmm.
But the problem was, seeing people, that's easy. What happens if they say yes? You got to go to work.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that's fine when you're brand new. But after 40 years, you got, a collection of people you can't keep up. So I quit. Turned it all over to someone else. And then we moved to York, Nebraska. And I sort of retired there and did odd jobs in one thing and another.
Mm-hmm.
And then from there, we went to Lindsborg, Kansas.
Mm-hmm.
That's Sweden, USA, the way it's advertised. And, and we stayed there for a while. And then from there, let's see, Lindsborg. Where did I go from Lindsborg? So we were living there, my daughter and son-in-law had moved to the Twin Cities.
Mm-hmm.
And my wife had been ill for, 4 or 5 years at least. All kinds of stuff from diabetes to rheumatoid arthritis. Anyway, so felt I couldn't do anything.
Mm-hmm.
I couldn't make her better. I couldn't,
Sure.
So she went to live with my daughter and son-in-law in the Twin Cities. And then roughly 6 months later, she died.
Oh, I'm sorry.
So she was out of that anyway. So then I moved up there and lived with them. I went to Norton, Kansas, and then up there. And then we knew about this place.
Mm-hmm.
So we checked it out. She thought that was better than living with them.
Mm-hmm.
And I was saying, I don't know, turns out this was better.
Good.
They're all, kids my own age,
Sure.
That's or right. Older.
Bob, how would you like to be remembered?
Oh, with a smile. No. Did the best he could. No regrets.
Thank you, Bob.
You're welcome. Is that?